the Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 3, chapter 22, text number 6. Is that right? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Dristya me Bhagavan Dristo, Dristya me Bhagavan Dristo, Dudasho yo Kritatmanam, Dudasho yo Kritatmanam, Dristya Pada Raja Sprishtang. Drishya padaraja spristam Shirshna me Bhagavata Sivam Shirshna me Bhagavata Shirshna me Bhavata Shivam Drishya me Bhagavan Drishyo Dudashoyo Kritatmanam Distya padaraja sprishtam Sirsna me bhavata shivam Distya me bhagavan drishto Dudasho yo kritatmanam Distya padaraja sprishtam Sirsna me bhavata shivam Word for word. Distya, by good fortune, may, my, Bhagavan, all powerful, Drista, is seen, Durdashaha,
not easily seen,
Yaha, who, Akrit Atmanam,
of those who have not controlled the mind and senses.
Distya,
by my good fortune,
Padaraja,
the dust of the feet,
Sprishtam,
is touched,
Sirshna,
by the head,
May,
my,
Bhavata,
your,
Shivam,
causing all auspiciousness.
Translation. It is my good fortune that I have been able to see you, for you cannot easily be seen by persons who have not subdued the mind or senses or controlled the senses. I am all the more fortunate to have touched with my head the blessed dust of your feet. Quickly, please. It is my good fortune.
It is my good fortune
that I have been able to see you.
That I have been able to see you.
For you cannot easily be seen.
By persons who have not subdued the mind,
or controlled the senses.
I am all the more fortunate
to have touched with my head
the blessed dust of your feet.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The perfection of transcendental life can be achieved simply by touching the holy dust of the lotus feet of a holy man. In the Bhagavatam, it is said, Mahat Padarajo Bishekam, which means to be blessed by the holy dust of the lotus feet of a Mahat, or a great devotee. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Mahatmanastu, those who are great souls, they're under the spell of the spiritual energy, and their symptom is that they fully engage in Krishna consciousness for the service of the Lord. Therefore, they are called Mahat. Unless one is fortunate enough to have the dust of the lotus feet of a Mahatma, on one's head. There is no possibility of perfection in spiritual life. The parampara system of disciplic succession is very important as a means of spiritual success. One becomes a Mahat by the grace of the Mahat spiritual master. If one takes shelter of the lotus feet of a great soul, there is every possibility of one's becoming a great soul also. When Maharaj Rahugana asked Jad Bharat about his wonderful achievements of spiritual success, he replied to the king that spiritual success is not possible simply by following the rituals of religion or simply by converting oneself into a sannyasi or offering sacrifices as recommended in the scriptures. These methods are undoubtedly helpful for spiritual realization, but the real effect is brought about by the grace of the Mahatma. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's 8 stanzas of prayer to the spiritual master, it is clearly stated that simply by satisfying the spiritual master, one can achieve the supreme success in life, and in spite of executing all ritualistic performances, if one cannot satisfy the spiritual master, one has no access to spiritual perfection. Here the word akri tat manam is very significant. Atma means body, soul or mind, and akrit atma means the common man who cannot control the senses or the mind. Because the common man is unable to control the senses and the mind, it is his duty to seek the shelter of a great soul or a great devotee of the Lord and just try to please him. That will make his life perfect. A common man cannot rise to the topmost stage of spiritual perfection simply by following rituals and religious principles. He has to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and work under his direction faithfully and sincerely, and then he becomes perfect without a doubt. Translation: it is my good fortune that I have been able to see you, for you cannot easily be seen by persons who have not subdued the mind or control the senses. I am all the more fortunate to have touched with my head the blessed dust of your feet. So this verse is about fortune, good fortune. I remember it wasn't so long ago, actually probably 35 years ago, when we were sitting in here, and we had the good fortune that Srila Prabhupada was sitting under the asasan, personally, as he is now, but in a different manifestation. And as we get older, it becomes much easier to see that time is so fickle it's almost like yesterday. You know, looking back 40 years ago, Prabhupada was there. We were sitting here, we were young. And we were just like us, we're listening to Bhagavatam class, but we're listening to Prabhupada. So we're very fortunate. And then again, we have these memories of Srila Prabhupada installing Shishi Gaunitai and offering the arti like that. It was just like yesterday. For a devotee, these meditations, these visions, they stay with the devotee. As his worshipable meditation. So this is good fortune. There's always good fortune for anyone who seeks the shelter of the Mahat, the great soul. So of course we all understand how fortunate, how great Srila Prabhupada is. Here in this particular verse, the actual criteria for making advancement is to keep this mentality that we are indeed fortunate. We're not unfortunate, regardless of what karmic baggage we bring with us. But we are fortunate to have the association of Mahat, great souls. And those Mahats can come in many different forms, from the beginning devotees to the intermediate devotees up into the Uttama Adhikari devotees. We have to always be conscious and thankful of our good fortune. Here, the great Manu, is it Manu, Swayambhuva Manu, coming to Kadamba Muni. Is that true? This is this story, right? We've been here for a few weeks, we've been following the story. So it's Swayambhuva Manu, I believe. True? Yeah? Okay. So he's come to the hermitage of the great sage, Kadamba Muni, Right? So here's the... we can't imagine the exalted position of Manu and his great responsibility in service to... Who is his father? Anyone know? Brahma? Okay. So, of course... his service is linked, his duty, like that, but he's coming to the hermitage of the great Chaitanya Kadamamuni, and he's feeling how fortunate I am. It's very easy to not feel, you know, it's very easy for a big king to come in to the hermitage and think they're much greater than the sage. And actually, even for someone like Mark Pritikit, he made that mistake. He came in and he was disturbed by not being respected by the sage. And as a result, he was cursed. Didn't he leave the snake around the neck, left, and then the sage's son cursed him. But on the transcendental level, actually all these things, even though they may appear to be unfortunate incidences, on a broad spectrum, when we're under the shelter of the divine energy, the spiritual energy, everything is good, believe it or not. Because why? Because Krishna is all good. You know, many people can't understand why there's so much suffering in the world if there is God. Why is that? But because they don't see the broad picture. The broad picture is, to take for example, this unfortunate, seemingly unfortunate incident of Maharaj Pritikit, a great soul, actually pure devotee to the Lord, coming in, making a seeming error. Oh, very unfortunate. And then getting cursed to die in 7 days. But the broader picture is that Srimad Bhagavatam was able to be spoken and given to the whole world. So how fortunate is that? And we're recipients of that fortune because we can take shelter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We can have the association of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srimad Bhagavatam is directly, what would you call it? Bhakti Shakti. There's nothing in the Bhagavatam which is not related to Vishnu, which is not related to pure devotional service. And in the very beginning, it's even described that all things which are not related to pure devotional service are kicked out. Right? Everything which is motivated by selfishness, things which are not pure, particularly service rendered for the only purpose of pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the whole purpose of the Bhagavatam. So there's many stories which describe this pure devotional service. And it's not a manifestation of the material energy. It's actually a manifestation of the spiritual energy. And we can only purify ourselves by associating with the spiritual energy. You can't purify ourselves by associating with the material energy. You know, it's described here, Prabhupada's in the purport, you know, this, even in the Vedas are part of the material energy. They describe all aspects of material energy, and they describe all aspects of what you want to do within the material energy, how to go about doing that and achieving the results. But it's all motivated by material motivation, by personal motivation to get something in return, to enjoy, to fulfill our material desires. And it all, generally, it creates forgetfulness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Vedas are set up in such a way that gradually, by following them, you will come, after many, many years, to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna gives that kind of, or the Supreme Lord Vishnu gives that that map, so to speak, that roadmap, so that you may start, but ultimately you'll get there if you follow the directions of the... It may take a long time, but you'll get there. But one can go straight to the liberated platform by going straight to the spiritual energy. And the spiritual energy was in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam, which only deals with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the spiritual relationship between the living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's all it deals with. It doesn't deal with all this other stuff. And if there is other stuff in there concerning the three modes of material nature, it's directly, it shows how it can be directly given in service to the Supreme Lord and therefore purified and become transcendental also. It's called Yukta Vairagyam. So here, all these stories are in are perfect for our spiritual advancement. We can take shelter of them and we can derive the benefit. Therefore, we are very fortunate. Manu comes to Gautama Muni and sees his exalted position. Indeed, he was about to have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his son, Kapila Muni. So he's more than just a sage. You know. And his wife is more than just the wife of a sage, Devahuti. She was able to bear the Supreme Lord within her womb and then achieve all the transcendental benefits of that. And that is actually developed. What is the real benefit of our spiritual endeavors? The real benefit is actually simply to increase our attachment to Krishna. That's all. And Krishna arranges life for his devotee in such a way that that attachment will be increased somehow or other. It may be quick, it may take a long time. It may even take many births. Example, Jad Bharat. Bharat Maharaj. And Prabhupada gives an example in this report also. Many lives, actually, Maharaj Bharat, he was the king of the world. And he renounced to go to the forest to engage in devotional service. Correct me if I'm wrong, if my memory might not serve me so well. But in the course of his spiritual advancement, he rose up to the level of strong attachment to Krishna, very strong attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, living by the river, the holy river, simply performing devotional service using mind, body and soul, etc., etc. One day, there was some deer, I think we know the story. Some deer came, scared by the hunter. She jumped in the waters. And I think as she jumped in the water, she was pregnant. She was heavy in calf. And she died by fright, gave birth. And the little deer, what do they call them? A little fawn came out. And this was all in the vision of Bharat. So he... somehow or other, he became compassionate, as we would. Oh, what to do with this deer? This poor little thing. So he began to feed the deer and had no mother, so he had to look after the deer. So it's described that that is an act of compassion, and no one should... You know, that compassion is auspicious, is good. But there is there's transcendental compassion as well. Even though... became compassionately affected and began to act in that way, it was still material energy. And he became more and more attached. So in one sense, we see that this was the entanglement of Bharat by becoming attached to something of the material modes of nature in goodness. We sometimes think that our energies are better spent to develop our mode of goodness than they are to engage in transcendental devotional service. And it's not necessarily a fact. If we give up devotional service to pursue the mode of goodness, that is a great mistake, as seen historically by the life of Bharat Maharaj. Sometimes we think, especially in this day and age, there's so much emotional things going on in the world which really affect compassionate nature of devotees. And sometimes devotees really can kind of become a little bit deviant, get on the bandwagon, become affected, and sign up for this, and sign this petition, sign that petition. I mean, these things are going on all the time anyway. But I've just noticed many devotees, sometimes we're all affected by that thing. We hate to see people being unfairly treated. We hate to see the downtrodden position of people that are suffering due to the hands of the demoniac-minded others. We don't like to see that. But if we give up our devotion, see, compassion is there, and Prabhupada always used to say, compassion is there in relationship to Krishna. There's no one more compassionate than a pure devotee of the Lord. He may not be engaged in philanthropic activities, and I say he's not, but actually, we can't understand the compassion, the feeling that the pure devotee of the Lord has for all living entities who have forgotten the transcendental energy, the spiritual energy. They're simply absorbed in material energy. And probably it's like wet stool and dry stool. It's all stool. It's just one side's wet and one side's dry. The dry side doesn't really smell that much. So may not be. You might not walk around it. You might just step over it or something. But that's all it is. But sometimes we become, Maya is so subtle that a great devotee of the Lord, Bharat Maharaj, who is rising up to this platform of bhava, complete attachment to the Lord, and then by misuse of his independence, misuse of the emotion of compassion, then he deviates from his spiritual duty, forgets Krishna, and remembers the deer at the time of death, and becomes a deer in his next life. And that's the history. That's how it went. How unfortunate. Oh dear. It's like so many of us. We struggle all our life to perform devotional service, but we may hit the dust at the end and bloop or do something. Or there's still no loss or diminution. And we see this in the life of Bharat Maharaj again. He took birth as a deer, but he was blessed by good fortune to be able to remember his past lives, that of the great king and that of the great king. Yeah. And he was not like a normal deer, apparently. He used to hang out with the sages. He was attracted by the, can we call them the Bhaktivedantas, those who were engaged in devotional service to the Lord. He would hang out for their remnants. Couldn't do much as a deer, unfortunately. But he would hear them and he would take prasadam. Like that. And then next life, there's different stories of how the deer ended his life, but he knew he was ending his life. He, or she, I don't know if it's a he or she. Does anyone know? Okay. Time took its toll. He found himself taking birth again in a family of quite an aristocrat, a highly advanced family in the Vedic conception. But they were engaged in Vedic rituals and etc. etc. But he, from the very beginning, being self-realized, didn't want to make the same mistake. So he began to act like a dullard, like an idiot, like a fool in the eyes of the world, to protect himself from again making the same mistake. And within his heart, he simply meditated on the Supreme Lord, but to the rest of the world he was such an unfortunate person. But he was the most fortunate person because he knew his priorities. He didn't again fall victim to the allurement of even the mode of goodness, but he became fixed. Now Krishna appreciates you being fixed in his service, even though it may seem a bit unfair, right, for the rest of the world. I should be out there, doing this philanthropic work or that philanthropic work, but it won't get that won't please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna, for what it's worth, demands pure, undivided, 100% devotional service. And why does he demand that? Because that's actually the spiritual, constitutional, eternal, loving relationship that we have. And he simply wants you to revive that. He simply wants us to revive that. So that we can be... And of course, when we arise to that level, then we can deal with the material world without being affected by it. We see in the lives of personalities like Srila Prabhupada, he could walk within the world, but he was never deviated in his Krishna consciousness. And if there was, of course, he was always compassionate, but he would distribute his compassion in relationship to Krishna consciousness in order to help the forgetful living entity become non-forgetful, to remember Krishna always. Whatever we do, whatever we think, this is Krishna's instruction in the Gita. Whatever you do, think about me always, render service to me. And then all this maya, this illusory energy of the world will disappear. We go back to Godhead very quickly. But we can spend eternity in the material as well if we neglect this very simple but very important instruction. So, is there any questions about this? You can ask questions and we can continue talking. Ajita?
Well,
That's another side. So the thing is, if we're sincere in our sadhana, we'll find the right path and the right balance in whatever level we are at in devotional service. We can't artificially act in a transcendental consciousness that we're not there at. We have to actually be truthful to ourselves. But at the same time, we have to make a sincere, purified effort to engage in. It's not that we're not pure devotees, but we have the process of pure devotional service that we engage in. By practice. So we have to be truthful to ourselves and try and engage in that practice as much as possible. And Prabhupada has given us the regulative principles to do that and the regulative lifestyle to do that and the practice, you know, the regular practice of serving Krishna to do that. We can do it. It may be a bit difficult to start with, but as we practice, our minds become more and more in control, our bodies become more and more in control, we become attached to Krishna gradually, it's a gradual process. Now, there's nothing wrong with giving some charity to someone, you know, it's just all in the material world. There's nothing wrong with that as long as you don't forget Krishna by doing it. We have to be honest with ourselves and see where it's leading us. Are we becoming so absorbed in our philanthropic work that we've forgotten to go to the temple? We've forgotten to go to Mangalarti. We've forgotten to chant around. You know, there's so many philanthropic. Well, there's nothing. Philanthropy is wonderful. You know, but do we open so many hospitals that and engage in serving the sick that we forget to open preaching centers and go out and Harinam? You know, and then we get so caught up in the political side of all that jargon. It's very easy to get swept away. And there's no solution to the suffering of the material world except for making our own self-Krishna consciousness and spreading Krishna consciousness as well, somehow or other. And you might build a hospital because you've got a lot of money, but make that hospital a Krishna conscious hospital. Right? Simple as that. You may give 10 bucks to the guy in the street because he's down and out. And how can a person walk past such a person like that? You know, you might walk in the street and there's an ant there. Oh, I'm a devotee, I'll tread on it, it's in my way. Devotees don't do stuff like that, they're compassionate. It's mercy, yeah, right. And so, you know, devotees are not hard-hearted, right? But they walk, you know, if you can't avoid the ant, or you see, sometimes we don't see the ant, what can you do? You're doing your service, so then it's mercy, you know. But if you go for the ant and kill it and say it's mercy, that's not mercy. That's your mercy, it's not Krishna's mercy. But you may be not, you're engaging in service, the pujari's walking out there, taking the Lord's food, prasadam in or out, and he steps on an ant, glorious. Glorious death, Laguti would say. But it's not glorious if, you know, we think that we're... But one interesting thing I thought of the other day, it's like we should, every day, take note of our Krishna conscious advancement. We should come to the temple with the idea of making advancement. We shouldn't come to the temple with the idea that we are advanced, that we have, you know, that's the difference. We should always try and remain humble because it's easy to do that because there's always advancement to be made. None of us will ever rise to the topmost position of devotional service. Guaranteed. Never. Can anyone say why? Who holds the topmost position of devotional service? Who holds that position? Exactly. We'll never become Radharani. And not only that, we'll never become one of the Shakis, one of the Ashta Shakis. You know? We'll never become probably anyone we think we want to become. Because this is all that kind of, I'd like to become a garland on the neck of Krishna, or you know, I want to become a gopi, so I'll, you know, meditate like that. We'll never become any of those things. We have to develop the desire to serve Krishna in whatever way he manifests that to us through the mercy of our throughout mercy of our guru, mercy of our devotee superiors. When we develop a real, sincere, and proper attitude of service, then Krishna will reveal himself and what your relationship with him is. It'll be revealed. You can't control it. No, Krishna, I'm not going to do that. I want to be a gopi. Right. You know, that just won't happen. We won't even think like that. And this is all just kind of romantic, wishful thinking. You know, we have to be... Krishna will give, you know, the mercy of Guru and Krishna. That will be there for us when we become qualified, and everything will be real, just like the sun lights up the It's a gradual thing, but you know, there will become a time when you know it will be more than just gradual. You know, like Narada Muni described, it's like illumination. What is it? Simultaneous lightning and thunder, something. Can't remember in the Bhagavad Times described, but illumination. And then everything is revealed in that light. And Krishna will reveal what our situation is. Anyway, I don't know how we got into that. I think we were talking about compassion and not stepping on ants. the devotee doesn't give up their natural compassionate nature, just like Arjuna also. He didn't give up that. Actually, Krishna corrected it to him. He said, this is false compassion. Your compassion will be better directed if you serve me, kill these people, and give them a better situation, and give the world a better situation. That's real compassion. See the broader picture? So, you know, there's not many devotees in the world, and we have to work on becoming better devotees ourselves for that benefit of the others that are not devotees yet, and try and spread Krishna consciousness. Don't become too attached to the situation we're in. Our real position is rendering service to Guru and Krishna and purifying ourselves and becoming Krishna conscious ourselves. Bhagavatam is there to help us. Pure devotee is there to help us. They inspire us. They connect us to the spiritual energy. They pick us out. Just like you pick up the Bhagavatam, immediately you're not in the material energy anymore. Yeah? All these things are simply to do with devotion, pure devotional service. We become attached to those things, and we enter those things, enter the spiritual energy, leave the material energy altogether. Any other questions? I don't know if that answered your question. I think we deviated a little bit. Any other questions?
In this part, the last section, it was glorified the dust of lotus feet, and it is said, I am all this more fortunate to have touched with my head. You have touched with my head and blessed the dust of your feet, the lotus feet. So, what you understand that this Guru Maharaj always should touch with your head and be fortunate?
There is always benefit in associating with a devotee, pure devotee, but it really depends what your consciousness is, what the effect will take place. We may think, oh, I touch the lotus and I'll get immediate liberation. That may not be. We have to approach... Krishna's the super soul within your heart and in everyone's heart. He knows what our motivations are. And just say, for example, for someone circumambulating Tulsi tree, then someone may just walk past a tulsi tree and no effect, seemingly no effect. Of course, we know there's some purification there. But another great devotee will go to the tulsi tree, offer humble obeisance to serve the tulsi tree, and have so much wonderful self-realization and attachment for Srimati Tulsi Devi. And Krishna may be so pleased with that he may even give him some special mercy. So it's the way we approach... therefore, like when Prabhupada was here, many people wanted to touch the lotus feet of Prabhupada. And many people did. But what was their motivation? You know? I think Maharaj was talking about it yesterday. Give me blessings. What kind of blessings? There was another story, something like that. I think Atmatattu used to tell it. He says, I'll give you my blessings. What's your blessings? Shaved head. You know that story? Does anyone know that story? It's a real funny story. Anyway, I can't really. Do you know it? Only say it if you can say it nicely, because it's properly.
From what I remember, it's Prabhupada Lilamrita.
Yeah.
Sequel to the Lilamrita, Prabhupada was on the train, and the devotees were there in the same carriage, and serving him very nicely. And at one point, there was three young students, very eager to get the Ashurvada.
freaked out.
Yeah,
and they went out. Shaved head, bless them. So, yeah. So it's how we approach, how we deal. Yeah, we heard that yesterday. Maharaj was explaining that in his class yesterday. So, but when you were saying that yesterday, I also heard, I don't know if it was a variation of the same story or not, or whether it happened in a different time, but there was definitely some, I think it's two different stories, but we kind of mix them up a little bit. But Prabhupada, it was funny, he said, my blessing, I give you blessing, my blessing is shaved head. Forcing them to surrender, you know, give them something to think about. Not that I just go away, touch the lotus feet, and then go away and expect some money at home in a bag, you know. Or expect good health. You have to, my blessing is shaved head. Learn how to become devotee, take up some austerity, follow the instruction of the spiritual master, then you'll get blessing. You'll get real blessing. You know. So we can be very fortunate. And the one thing, I'll just read this first part before we kind of ramble on too much. Prabhupada does say, as far as touching the lotus feet is concerned, and as far as associating with devotees is concerned, wait, I'm missing my glasses. He does say, where is this verse? In the beginning of the verse, Prabhupada says, the perfection of transcendental life can be achieved. He doesn't say is achieved. And I notice this in the report, and wherever he talks about, you know, associating with devotees and such like that, he says can be achieved. He doesn't say is achieved, because not everyone achieves it, you know. The perfection of transcendental life can be achieved simply by touching the holy dust of the lotus feet, holy man. So that means even by touching the feet, one somehow or other may be blessed to achieve the perfection of life immediately. That's possible. Like, there's a special word for that. Special mercy, Kripa City. You know? Of course, there's all levels of Kripa City too. But there are, you know, there are in the Bhagavatam also, there are incidences where, you know, one is touched by, or sometimes touched by the hand of Mahaprabhu. And all of a sudden they become absorbed in pure love of God and ecstatic symptoms are showing. But others may not be. You know, many, many people came in the association of Mahaprabhu. But according to their advancement of devotional service, how much they have done in the past, or even how much mercy that the pure devotee is willing to give them, it's not automatic, mechanical thing. It's something which we have to, you know, develop our consciousness. And that's why we're always trying to implore the devotees to be humble with each other, to not offend each other, to serve each other. The more you serve each other, the more one day that each other might be, and you might not even know it might be a pure devotee of the Lord. You might not even know it might be Jabbarat. No one knew he was a pure devotee of the Lord. Actually, they were just joking about him. They even tried to kill him. They tried to chop his head off, didn't they? Jabbarat, they took him to Kali. He tried to chop his head off. But Kali jumped out of the deity and protected him. Right? And he ran away again. And then what happened? Then he was just wandering around like a madman. And the king happened to come by in a palanquin who was on his way to see a great sage or something. And one of his palanquin carriers kind of got sick or something. I don't know what happened. But anyway, tripped over and broke his leg and couldn't carry the palanquin anymore. So they had to find someone. And Jadbrad happened to be just kind of, you know, looking a bit stupid, sitting on the side of the road. And no one knew, but then the king said, okay, get this guy. So he couldn't carry the palanquin. He was a strong person. Everyone thought he was just a dullard, and he tried to carry the palanquin, but all of a sudden, getting back to compassion, all of a sudden there's all ants all over the place. He couldn't carry the palanquin because there were ants there. He didn't want to tread on them. So as he was trying to negotiate his way through the ants, everyone was trying to kind of carry the palanquin, and he was trying to hop over the ants, and the palanquin was going all over the place. The king was getting, you know, completely, what's going on? And they all turned around and they all blamed this fellow. And of course, you know, the history there, then the king kind of abused him like crazy. But then, for the first time in his life, Jagbarat actually spoke. And it was a shock to everyone. And he spoke eloquent transcendental knowledge to the king. It shocked him from his bodily condition of life. And there was something took place then by the association of Jad Bharat. So what I'm saying, you don't know where the pure devotee is. Who knows? Especially in such a big society now. We have so many devotees doing so many things on so many levels of preaching and giving their association. We don't know where they are. So better to be careful and treat everyone with proper respect and don't throw too many offences around the place, because that's not good for our own advancement. And Krishna is within the heart. He sees if you do something to please the pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada, he reciprocates. He gives you so much advancement so quickly. We were nothing. We were, I'm not saying we were all drug addicted hippies, but we came from so many walks of life, had no spiritual advancement whatsoever. A few years associated with the Srila Prabhupada, we're around the world preaching. We're not saying we were pure, but we're preaching pure devotional service in whichever way we could, That is how easily Krishna gave us that potency to do that. That's how easily Krishna gives his mercy to one who simply tries to please. And our only qualification is we love Prabhupada, we try to please him. And then from that, everything else has come. Our devotees are mature, spiritually mature in their own right, still relying on the mercy of their spiritual master, but there are very many advanced devotees in our movement. And you don't know who you're associating with, so take stock of our position and associate nicely with each other, and everyone will make advancement. So on that, Krishna Rupa.
Yeah, just two comments. One comment, one story. Just to Prabhu's comment about touching taking the dust from the lotus feet of the great devotees, the pure devotees. Prabhupada actually didn't like devotees touching, or didn't like anyone touching his lotus feet. There's occasional stories where devotees just couldn't resist, and Prabhupada's feet were right there, and they did that, but Prabhupada did not like it. So as a rule, you didn't touch through Prabhupada's lotus feet. But the main point is that we should be so eager and so mad after rendering service to the pure devotee, rather than trying to seek, something from him. We should think what I can give to him. Of course, we can't ever repay the spiritual master, but we can try and render service to Prabhupada's mission, his the living Guru. And the other one is a story that happened actually in Melbourne, so I thought it might be of interest to the Melbourne devotees if you haven't heard it already. But, it's about Prabhupada's extreme compassion and the true nature of compassion, which is to give spiritual life, not some, $5 here or $2 there. And as Chidahari, my godbrother, told me this story. It was during the Rath Yatra time, or lead up to Rath Yatra time here in Melbourne. So all the devotees were very busy building the Rath, working on the Rath car. So Prabhupada was going on a morning walk in the car. So there's only two devotees with Prabhupada, because everyone else was very otherwise engaged. There was a driver, the Guru's in Kushara, and Chidahari, and Srila Prabhupada. And Chidahari was sitting in the back of the car with Srila Prabhupada. He was looking out one window, and Srila Prabhupada was looking out the other side. And they were going on the main road. It is the main road to the temple.
Thank you.
And it was becoming peak hour traffic, so there were lots of commuters on the road. And Chidahari was looking out the window thinking, boy, I'm so fortunate. I'm sitting here with the Jagat Guru, Srila Prabhupada, all these other, people are just like, rats on a treadmill. They're going to work, and he's feeling a little superior. And then he looked across to Prabhupada, and at that second, Prabhupada turned to him. Prabhupada had tears streaming down his cheeks, and he turned to Chidahari and said, "How can they be saved?" So Prabhupada's transcendental compassion was how we could save the struggling living entity. So that was a very nice story.
Okay. Thank you. I'll go to Srila Prabhupada.